Pink Whale Nuts Garage.
Hello, everyone. This is the co-host emeritus, the Laughing Buddha, welcoming you to a live Pink Wheel Nuts Garage on this beautiful Friday afternoon. And rounding the corner is our honorary Pineapple Princess with sand between his toes, the Faye Driver.
Hello, everybody. Hi, Laughing Buddha. Thank you for that lovely introduction.
Well, you're so welcome. You're relaxed back from vacation and climbing the social ladder as we speak.
That's true. That's very true. Yes, and in fact, it is a lovely day here in Vancouver. It is Hawaiian-esque in the weather we're having today. And I know that you're looking forward to warm weather because you have a bouncing new baby in your backyard. We want to tell us about that?
Yes, this morning, bright and early at 7:30, two strapping young workmen showed up at my house and installed central air conditioning for me. And I am very excited about this because this means that I can enjoy my entire house when it's a bajillion degrees outside rather than just one or two rooms.
Right. That's terrific. Congratulations.
Thank you. It was expensive, but I think I'm worth it.
Yeah. Were you standing out there in a polka dot dress with iced tea?
That's
for
right.
For the workers?
Yes, my polka dot muumuu with a little bit of iced coffee. Mm. And they did an excellent job, and they wrapped it up really quickly. I was kind of impressed. It was about 2 hours or so, and they were done.
Terrific. So you must have already an air-forced furnace system in your house, is
yes.
that right?
Yes. Yeah, that I had already. So this is pretty much just plug and play, and I'm very happy with the work.
Well, that's terrific. Congratulations. We're very happy for you.
Thank you.
Someone else who enjoys coffee, whether it's a decaf Americano or not, is Ranger John. Hello, John.
Hi, Faye. How are you?
We're very well over here. How are you today?
Good. So you know the difference between a decaf and a decaf Americano now.
Well, yes, you know, here on the West Coast, we are very tuned in to coffee, so we know way too much about coffee. So yes, I knew what all those things were, but I'm a little disappointed that you can only get a decaf coffee until 12 o'clock or something, I believe you said.
Yeah, and then you have to get Americano after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, folks, you'll have to listen to Ranger John's last episode, the very dull and boring "We're Not Driving in the Car" show.
Yeah, but there was no road noise, though.
We're gonna dispute this on tonight's show, actually. But first, let me introduce the rest of our guests who are joining us tonight. So tighten up your seatbelt, Ranger John, because we're going to get into this.
All right.
Now, let me introduce the other folks in the Midwest. And we have joining us tonight is Eric Boo. Hello, Eric.
Hey, how are you, Faye?
I'm really well. Nice to hear you again.
Yes, I've been going really old school. I've been riding a bike more and more, getting ready for we have a state across the state bike ride every year. It's called Ragbri. It's been going on for like 24 years.
And say that again?
It's called Ragbri. It's actually based out of our capital city of our state, Des Moines. They have a paper called the Des Moines Register. Mm-hmm. And it's an acronym that says Register Annual Great Bike Ride Across Iowa.
Okay.
Actually, so, it's one of the biggest tourist attractions of the Midwest.
Really, eh? Hmm. Mm-hmm. So you're pounding the pavement, so to speak.
Yes, I put in 20 miles today. Tomorrow, I hope to do like 40 or 50.
Do you have one of those ridiculous Fitbits that everyone's talking about?
No, I do not. I don't map my ride. I don't have the Fitbit.
You don't have your heart rate constantly beamed back into your left ear.
It's real easy when it goes bum 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 bum. It's probably going too fast for a bike ride.
Right.
A Fitbit wouldn't capture a bike ride anyway.
Really?
No, that Map My Ride stuff, the app that you have, you can get for your phone that you see everybody, you know, on the Facebook saying, oh, I mapped my walk. Look at me. It took me 3 hours to go 3/4 of a mile. Oh, look how fit I am.
But you know what I saw advertised? There was something called the pet bit or the dog bit or something that where you snap the thing on your dog so that you know how much exercise your dog's getting. And all it is a Fitbit for your dog.
No. I thought, the perfect solution for this to get an extra for your dog. It's called the tennis ball. That's it. But no, so I've been doing that. That's why you really haven't heard from me.
All right. Well, we're glad to have you on the show.
Thank you.
And I know you're joined by our producer here, and that is Brenda Boo. Hi, Brenda.
Hello, everybody.
Who's drinking from a lovely...
Oh, we'll get to that. Don't foreshadow anything here. You're going to ruin the surprise.
Hey, I have an announcement to make before. Can I make an announcement?
But she can announce me.
It has nothing to do with my beverage.
Jeez.
Do you want to hear?
Yes, we're dying to know.
So just today I decided that I'm going to do my own version of Nod Pod Pomo in June. And I'm either going to call it Jerkin' It in June or Janky June. I haven't decided yet. So
Jerkin' It in June?
Yeah. So if you are subscribed to my feed, get prepared.
To unsubscribe?
30 days. Shut up. I know where you live, by the way. So they're not going to be my usual half an hour. It'll only be about 10 minutes.
Right.
But I've just decided I'm going to do it. So, Faye, when are you going to unsubscribe?
Well, I tell you what. If you're going to do janky, what did you call it?
Either Jerkin' It in June or Janky June. I haven't decided yet.
June. I'm going to do the Fitbit Chronicles in June. I'm going to read off my... I'm going to post an episode every day that's just the stats from my Fitbit, which I do not own.
So you don't have a Fitbit, do you?
I think that would be hilarious.
Those Fitbits. Just
make some, throw some numbers in there.
I did 50,324 steps all back.
Okay, Brenda, we've heard your diatribe about Fitbits.
What are you doing?
No, that was me. Brenda hasn't said anything about the Fitbit.
They are pretty damn ugly, though. Anyway.
All right. So let's introduce our last guest, and that not last but not least, and certainly. Definitely most important is that Peter G.
Hi, Peter. Hello. Thank you. I don't post my Fitbit stats because they are getting annoying. Like people that go to the gym and say, it's leg day today. Mm-hmm. You know, just stop it. Unless they're over my shoulders. I don't care if it's your leg day.
Really, haven't you seen those? Because they have them on, they'll post it on Facebook where they'll say, oh, I just did 3 blocks in 3 hours. And you're like, how often were you stopping? It just doesn't make sense.
People can post food as a worthy piece of information. I suppose exercise is just as important as a sausage on a paper plate.
I think it's all narcissistic.
How dare you?
All right. Well, speaking of food on a plate, let's get to beverages. And I'm going to start because I am not happy with what my beverage is tonight. Uh-oh. I'm drinking a white wine because I thought, you know, it's a lovely, summery, sunny day. I had to work today and I got home from work a couple of hours ago. And I thought, oh, it's Friday. I'm going to have a lovely, crisp, cool glass of wine. But I'm just not enjoying my wine. It's actually giving me heartburn. So I have a backup. I have a backup beverage because I am a Boy Scout. Which is going to be, I've not busted into it yet, but I have a large glass of white rum and a bottle of Coke here, and I'm going to crack that Coke open and have a rum and Coke.
Is it a
Cuba Libre?
No, is it a 2-liter bottle? Because I'd like to.
No.
That's classy, baby. You open up that 2-liter and just drink it straight out of there.
We do not condone 2-liter bottles in this house. So let's see. Laughing, Brenda, you'll be last because I know you're special.
Brenda,
Laughing Buddha, what are you drinking tonight?
Well, it is quite warm here today. One of the very beautiful days of summer. It's about 87 degrees with mild humidity. So I am having a gin and tonic with 2 limes. And to my left is an ice bucket, extra tonic, and a bottle of gin. So let's celebrate.
Nice. What kind of gin is it specifically?
Let's see. This one, that's I think it's Gordon's London Dry. It's an acceptable cheap gin that I keep on hand.
It's mid-shelf gin.
Yeah, mid-shelf. Not bottom shelf, not top shelf, but certainly drinkable.
Yeah.
Ranger John, are you imbibing tonight?
I am having a Manhattan.
Oh, yes, your favorite. Oh,
yeah, it is my favorite.
Very nice.
Yep.
Eric?
I've already had 2 beers tonight.
So much for that bike ride.
Well, RAGBRAI also stands for Register's Annual Great Beer Run across Iowa. So you've got to train in that regard, too. I've had a Summer Shandy and a PBR, so I'm actually just having an iced coffee right now.
Oh, aren't you? Well, coffee is the order of the day today. Peter, what are you having tonight?
Is it an iced Americano or just a regular iced coffee?
Actually, it's coffee that was in the pot from this morning that I just put some creamer in and said, ah, screw it.
Folgers. Oh.
Actually, it's Dunkin' Donuts. Thank you very much.
Oh, fancy.
Yeah.
Peter G., what are you having tonight?
Well, I'm having a vodka tonic. You can hear my ice tinkling there. And I didn't have a lime, though. I have to go to Big Fatty's for limes now, so I put a lemon in it. Mm-hmm. But so a vodka tonic, and it's Finlandia vodka with a lemon.
Oh, yes. Very nice. And Brenda?
Mm-hmm.
What are you drinking tonight, Brenda?
Well, this week I went to my mailbox, and what did I find? I found a package, and it came all the way from Hawaii, and in it was this glass from the Hard Rock Cafe, and it said Honolulu on it, and it came from the Faye driver, the infamous glass that he got from the flirty waitress at the Hard Rock Cafe. So, since I begged for souvenirs, as is something that I do, he acquiesced and sent me this glass. So I'm drinking some delicious Diet Coke out of this very fancy official Pink Wheel Nuts Garage glass.
Diet Coke that came from a 2-liter, by the way.
I took it out of a 2-liter.
That's very nice. You also got some other little trinkets in there, too. Do you want to tell us what those were?
Yes, so I... What's so damn funny, Mr.
Oh, nothing.
Please make
go ahead.
The things
tell him
so that we can have it on the
Well, these were things that he found on the beach. So I asked him to look down.
Dirty old condom.
Hypodermic.
Hypodermic.
Hypodermic needles. IV bags, other medical waste.
what was it, Brenda?
Colostomy. A little baby dolphin trapped in one of those can rings.
Yeah.
Are you nets. You got it out of your system yet? Anything else? Joking. That's fine. So I asked Faye when he's walking in paradise in the beaches, I said, please look down and see if you can find me any shells. And he found me a bunch of coral pieces and a little tiny, the world's tiniest conch shell I've ever seen. And then he recruited all the little umbrellas that him and his family were drinking. So there's about almost 10 of them. And they've already become part of some art pieces in my home. And then for some reason, I got a stick that apparently held his hamburger together. So... That's what I got from Hawaii.
Wow. Do you want to explain that, Faye?
Well, that was a mistake. I knew that there was a toothpick, like a rather longer than normal toothpick with a little plastic frilly thing on the end, right? Mm-hmm. And I had this really magnificent blue cheeseburger that had an onion ring sticking out the top of it, and it was very, very nice. Great burger, very tasty. But anyway, I was collecting all of our drink umbrellas, and I had put my burger stick in the pile. And I knew there was a burger stick in this pile of umbrellas, and I was searching and searching through the all of these things to try to find that toothpick, and I just could not find it. And so I thought, oh, I must have taken it out. And so I piled all these, you know, umbrellas into Brenda's package, and lo and behold, I guess I overlooked my burger toothpick.
Oh yeah, then there was the swizzle stick for your drink that had a little Hard Rock Cafe guitar on it, right. And a whole bunch of actual sand that got dumped out onto my floor and table when I opened the package.
Exactly.
So thank you again.
You're very welcome. All right, folks. Now, listen, we have a lot of things to discuss on the Pink Wheel Nuts Garage show tonight that pertain to vehicles. So I want to get right into this, and we're going to turn our attention to Ranger John, because Ranger John has a serious problem that's occurring with Kenty's car. So Kenty has a 2008 Toyota Matrix. And Ranger John, can you tell us what's going on for Kenty right now?
Well, so I talked to Kenty this morning, and I asked him for some dates and details, and he was not overwhelmingly he wasn't altogether, he was a little vague. But this is what I got. He got an oil change in January, like mid-January. And in that oil change, it was the first time that he switched from a combination regular oil and synthetic oil to all synthetic oil. And then in March, a lot of warning lights.
I just messaged Faye and see if that'll help. So if we're online, and
we hear all but Faye and John. So Faye and John have gone off on their own.
Well,
let's just continue with the show then.
As the co-host emeritus, I guess I got to step up my game. So yeah. I think we're going to take this opportunity to recognize those people that are joining us in the chat room. And those would be Big Fatty from BigFattyOnline.com. Don't forget the online part. Ed Chan, Moose P has joined us. Scotty Battler was in the room, but he stepped away. Apparently his termite exterminator is here and is doing that thing that they do with those toxic chemicals to take care of all those insects that like to eat the wood. And Toppy Smelly.
I'm back, Faye.
Okay. And
Hunter,
can you hear me as well?
Yes. I can. Yeah. Okay. Yes. All what right. happened?
I don't know, but now your mic is super hot, John.
Okay, let me. I don't know how. I got disconnected or.
Yeah, so did I, actually.
Okay.
So Laughing Buddha was doing a magnificent job covering for us.
I am a professional, you know.
How is that? Is that better or?
Yeah, you're okay. We can deal with it.
I can change some of these. How's that?
No, that's nicer. Yes, very good.
Okay.
All right. Let us try this again, John. So, Kenty got an oil change. He moved to synthetic in January, and then in March he had warning lights appear on his dash, telling him that he had low oil pressure, I presume.
He doesn't know which lights came on. He said it was like several lights. And I asked which ones, and he said he couldn't remember. He didn't know.
Uh-huh.
So he took the car in, and they told him that he needed an oil change, and that was like 2 months later. Another thing is that he got the initial oil change where he changed to totally synthetic oil at a different place.
Mm-hmm.
He got it at Jiffy Lube. I don't know if that makes any difference. And so I asked him if they just needed to add oil in March or if it was an oil change, and he said an oil change. And then last Saturday, did you get that part, or was I cut off then?
No, what happened last Saturday?
So last Saturday, he checked the oil, and he had to put 2 quarts of
oil in the car. And I asked him if he checked it while the car was running or the car was hot or the car was cold. And he said he waited he turned the car off and waited 10 minutes and then checked the oil, and it was down 2 quarts.
Ooh, okay, that's good. I mean, that's good that he checked it like that.
So and then after that, I said that we performed all of those tests that you recommended about looking for the smoke coming out of the exhaust and looking for the foam under the oil cap, and none of those tests were positive.
Okay. All right, so let me tell you what I've discovered about the 2008 Matrix, the Toyota Matrix, and I think the Toyota Camry made around the same time, after between 2006 and 2010 or something like that. These engines are actually prone to burning oil, so it's not necessarily... apparently the problem with these engines is the piston rings are somewhat low quality. So with a badly fitting piston ring, what's going to happen is the oil is going to get sucked into the combustion chamber, because the piston ring is supposed to form a very tight seal between the piston and the cylinder, which is the wall that the piston runs up and down in.
Right.
So there's a flaw in these piston rings, and because of that, it uses up a bit too much oil. So but this is
does that happen at a particular mileage, or you?
No, not to my, well, they say after the car gets a bit older, probably up into the 60,000 mile range, after 60,000 miles.
Yeah, we have 159,000.
Yeah, so it's not this is, given the age of the car, it's not unusual that this car would be burning a bit of oil, but we're not exactly sure how much oil it really is burning, but mm-hmm. This is something you really need to now monitor closely, because this problem, if it's gone unnoticed, like if he encounters red lights on his dash again because there's no oil, that will lead to a catastrophic failure of the engine. So
yeah,
you really need to stay on top of it now and check your oil more than once a month. And make sure that there's always oil in the car.
Like once a week, maybe, or yeah. Twice every 2 weeks?
At least once a week, I would say.
Okay. You know, one thing about the lights is that this car has a little quirk, and that if it rains a lot, these three warning lights come on, these very specific lights. I can't remember which three they are either. And then they don't go off until the car dries out.
Hmm.
And I think it was rainy at that time.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give you a couple of tips that you can also check and be aware of for this car. Something that can contribute to burning oil a lot is the PCV valve. And this is a really cheap thing to replace. It's about $9. And it won't usually be done... unless you actually do a tune-up on the car. So, you know, for all you know, it could be the original PCV valve. And all a PCV valve is it's a little plastic attachment that goes into the top of the engine where the head gasket is. It's on top of the engine. There'll be a tube that comes up from the bottom of the engine that's probably black or a fairly good sized, like a sturdy tube, and it brings in hot air back into the top of the engine. And there's a little valve in there, and if you change that valve, that can reduce the oil consumption that's occurring. So that's a really easy thing to do. You could go to your pet shop boys, your local whatever discount parts store, and ask them, or look up the PCV valve for this car, pay the $9, and you can see what it looks like, and you can go find that part and plunk it into place. It's really easy to do.
Do they maintenance, like the 120,000 mile maintenance and so on, is that something that they would check?
It's one of those things that's easily overlooked. So they wouldn't necessarily, they might try to recommend changing the PCV valve, but it's not something that they always necessarily do because they rarely go bad. So it's one of those hit and miss things. So I would say just change it for a $10 investment. You could be saving yourself, you know, a quart of oil costs about $5 or $6 now, especially if he's using synthetic oil.
It's
going to be expensive.
Yeah. Okay.
And then my other recommendation for you, if this oil burning problem still is going on, is you can just, I know he's now using synthetic oil. That's a very good decision on his part, but make sure he's using a good thick oil. Do you get very cold? Do you get below like minus 20 Fahrenheit or minus 30 Fahrenheit in your
neck
of the woods?
No. It's like rarely zero.
Yeah, okay. Then you can go to a thicker oil. I would recommend a 10W40 if he's using any oil that's lower than those numbers, like a 5W30 or even maybe a 5W40, he should bump that up to a 10W40.
Okay.
And that will reduce the oil consumption as well, because a thicker oil will be less likely to squeeze by those piston rings and burn off.
Okay. And it's that weight oil is okay in cold weather as long as it's not too cold.
Exactly. Yeah. If you're getting down below 20 below Fahrenheit, then I would say that's not a good idea to go to a 10W40. But if that only happens occasionally, you'll be all right. But if you are in colder climates, you'd want a more viscous oil, so a lower number for your oil.
Okay.
All right. Well, do keep an eye on that oil consumption, and I'm anxious to see how things turn out.
So you asked me to, you wanted to report about the sport mode?
Oh, yes.
So today I really tried it. I sort of had, did some desultory trying of it before, but today I really tried it, and it really does work.
Okay, so just let me explain what we're talking about for our listeners. Ranger John has a 2013, is it? 2012. Yeah. Fiat 500, and it's a standard transmission Fiat 500. I think it's a 1.6 liter four-cylinder engine, and he has sport mode, and it was a little unclear exactly how the sport mode gets turned on and how it works. So we figured out how to turn the sport mode on. So now you've done this, John, and what have you discovered?
Well, it doesn't make any difference in the steering. I don't notice any difference in the steering, but it gets really very peppy and a lot more oomph when you step on the gas.
All right, that's good.
Yeah.
Are you enjoying that?
Yeah, well, today, who's typing there?
That's Toppy Smelly. No. Peter.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Turn your mic off if you're going to type. Boy, I got to get Toppy on the show here. Sorry, Ranger John, go ahead. So you're having peppier response?
Yeah, and it's really noticeable.
Oh, good. All right. I'm glad it's working for you. And do you have to rev the engine? Because it's the instructions say you press the button and you rev up the engine and it comes on.
Well, you just sort of like rev the engine and then press the button, or press the button at the same time that you're revving the engine. Hmm. That's sort of what I did today, and I could really notice the difference.
Right. Okay, well, that's good. Okay, Peter, if you're finished typing, you can unmute yourself.
And yes.
We're going to get into exactly what's been going on for you. You've been traveling around the United States from one
to New York,
shore to the other.
Yeah. Yes, I flew over Iowa and waved hello at the various people down there. The little flyovers.
Transcontinental.
Yeah. But we got into a little car accident in New Jersey. And so I just wanted to just illustrate the difference between good drivers and good cars and bad drivers and bad cars, because I think this little example is very emblematic of that. So,
all right. So tell us what happened. Who was driving and what went on?
Well, it was my husband's sister. Her name is Marion, and she was driving. And it's a BMW X3. I think it's 2009. It's kind of like a crossover vehicle. And my husband was in the passenger side in the front. And I was in the back behind the driver. And we were just going down this county road in New Jersey somewhere, in Red Bank, New Jersey, for those of you in that area. And it's kind of like a 40-mile-an-hour, two lanes in each direction, kind of mixed residential business kind of county road. And so there are side streets where people live. And so this 17-year-old girl in a Hyundai, it's like a Hyundai Accent, it was some junky kind of SUV thing.
Yeah, it's a Tucson, Hyundai Tucson.
Hyundai Tucson, yeah. And she was trying to make a left turn, and we were approaching, you know, going down the street, la, 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 la. And she was up ahead of us on the right, trying to make a left. And she was looking to her right to see the traffic coming in that direction, but she was not looking to the left to see us. And so from this dead stop on this side street, she gunned it because there was traffic coming in the other direction. She gunned it to try and beat that traffic and just smashed right into us. Oh, and Faye posted the intersection in question, which I pulled up from Google Maps. And there was a horrific – we could see it. This is going to happen. You know those moments
right.
Then you know that you're going to get into a crash and there's nothing you can do about it.
Right.
And we could just see it happening. And Marion was really good. She tried to swerve a little to the left, but not so much to get into the oncoming traffic, of course. Mm-hmm. But this person hit us anyway. But she held on to that wheel. And after the impact, she got over to the right side of the road because there was a car behind us and there was oncoming traffic. So she did a really good job, you know, because I think a lot of people might let go of the wheel and be pushed into the oncoming traffic. And this girl's car was, the whole front end was completely crumpled. Mm-hmm. And the BMW did its job in, you know, amazing German engineering. The side airbags went off and... the whole side of the car, that side, the passenger side of the car, is pretty much ruined. I mean, they're going to have to replace the whole set of two doors and two fenders and two bumpers and everything, mm-hmm. all the glass and everything. But, you know, we all walked away from it. So that's the thankful part. But just the difference between, an experienced driver in a good car and a bad driver in a junky kind of car. Sorry, Moose. So that was my little accident.
Wow. So what was the injury factor?
There were no
anybody hurt?
No, my husband had a little sore shoulder from where the airbag kind of hit him in the shoulder. Mm-hmm. There's the side airbag, and it came out in two places on the side door. And it came out like from above, like a curtain that kind of dropped, and it came out from where the armrest in the door was.
Right.
And I had never seen the side airbag deployed. Front airbags, yes. But so it was really interesting. And then, of course, the roadside assistance was calling within 10 seconds. BMW was on the phone trying to get us, make contact with us. So they just did a wonderful job. And the car did exactly what it was supposed to.
Well, that's good. You know, generally those BMWs have about 10 airbags in them, as a general rule. So that's good. And what about the young lady? Now, she didn't get hurt either, or do
we
know? No,
she did not get hurt. She was shaken up, and she was hysterically crying. Oh, I'm so sorry. And all her neighbors and her family ran out because they were all living on this little cul-de-sac where she was living.
Oh, yes.
And the police came, and they cited her for bad driving.
So, oh, good.
Yes.
Does anyone have questions for Peter G.?
So, Peter, how was the insurance filing for your sister-in-law, so to speak?
Well, she called her insurance, but you know, the girl's insurance or the girl's parents' insurance is really going to be paying for the whole thing, because she was, the cop told us, the very, very attractive Officer Rondazzo from the New Jersey State Police. He already told us that he has cited her for this accident and that she is the party at fault because she did not look to her left to see us coming. So that girl's insurance company is going to have to be on the hook for the whole thing.
You know, can I just say, it depends on what state you're in when it comes to this fault shit. Because when my parents were visiting us in North Carolina once, there was a car that was behind them who clearly crossed the line that separated the lanes and clipped my dad's truck. And when it was all said and done, they didn't give her 100% fault. They gave us a certain percentage of a fault just because we existed. Because in North Carolina, they don't assign 100% fault to anybody.
Yeah, I think it's the same way in California, Brenda. Because when that motorcyclist was lane splitting and ran into me as I was trying to change lanes, I ended up with 51% of the blame because I was the one that was changing lanes.
That's bullshit.
It was bullshit. I was mad about that.
Yeah, I don't like that lane splitting.
Oh, it's really terrible. I'm so paranoid about motorcycles now.
Here in Canada or here in British Columbia, the police don't even come to car accidents unless you're dying. If you're injured, they'll come. But failing that, the fault is laid down by our provincial insurance corporation. You have to plead your case to some bureaucrat in an office. And you hardly ever go to court about things like this unless you force it.
I think, Faye, this was so blatant, and the fact that she admitted it right in front of the cop, which I guess is not a wise thing to do,
right.
That he cited her right there. So they'll be paying for the whole repair.
So now this could have been a head-on. Would this have been a head-on collision if it was any worse?
Well, I think so. I mean, because we could have been pushed into the oncoming traffic, and there was cars coming in the other direction. So, yes, it could have been. Mm-hmm. And I think the experienced driver knew better, you know, than to let go and panic. And she, you know, she got over to the right and was able to stop the car. And both tires on the right side of the car were flattened too, so it was not easy to stop this car. Hmm. We were going about 45 miles an hour, which was about the speed limit.
Wow, that's amazing. That's great. That's good. 45 miles an hour, that's pretty fast to be encountering another vehicle.
Yeah. And however fast that this girl was going, because she was stopped, but then she gunned it to try and beat that traffic. So she's probably going 25 miles an hour, 30 miles an hour.
Okay, now this begs the question then. Here we're going to open a big can of worms here. What are people's feelings if two cars traveling in opposite directions at 50 miles an hour smash into each other? Is the combined force of the accident like a 100-mile-an-hour collision, or is it only like a 50-mile-an-hour collision?
Oh, this is a physics problem.
Yes. Well, we were always taught in driver's ed that that's a 100-mile-an-hour collision, but I sense the reason you're asking the question is because that's not correct.
Well, let's go around the room. Eric, what do you think of all this?
Well, I think it's 100 because if it's 50 in one direction and 50 in the other, and you have meet in the middle, then you've got two inertias fighting each other, as opposed to 50-0. I'm going to say double, or at least more than 50.
Right. Okay. Brenda, do you have thoughts on this?
Yeah, I'm going with Eric's line of reasoning too, because even if you hit a wall, if the wall wasn't moving, that would just be 50, right? So I'm going to go with Eric's.
Or a telephone pole?
Yeah, you know, things that people drive into.
Peter, did you want to elaborate on your...
I think it's 100. Yeah, I'm gonna. Yeah.
What about you, Laughing Buddha?
Well, I'm pretty, and math is hard, so I'm gonna guess that it's more than 100.
More than 100.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Ranger John.
Oh, I think it's certain death for all concerned.
Unless you're in a BMW.
Unless, right.
Well, I'm going to disagree with all of you because I believe that this topic was tackled on a Mythbusters episode. And they discovered, they purport that the total force on the body is not equal to the two, whatever the two speeds encountered are. It's more like about 75% of the combined speed, I believe, is what they
sort of figured out. Okay, so it'd be 75 miles per hour, or?
Yeah, somewhere in there.
Okay.
I feel like you tricked us. You didn't give us that as an option. You said it was either 100 or 50.
I didn't say. I made no claims to that.
I'm still pretty. Math is hard.
I think really what they boiled it down to was you're traveling at 50 miles an hour, and when you encounter that object, you decelerate from 50 miles an hour down to zero. You're not imparted with any extra accelerations from colliding with that vehicle. And it's pretty much like hitting a brick wall. I think that's what they came up with. If anybody wants to dispute this, please email us at podcast@pinkwheelnut.com.
Well, it's not, and remember, we're talking speed and not energy. If it truly is a physics question, the question is not how fast or what is the impact, it's how much energy is exerted when those two collide. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I could see where the Mythbusters were coming from, but clearly two moving objects is going to have a greater energy than kinetic energy than if it hits a brick wall.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Peter, for sharing your accident with us, and glad to hear that everyone came out of it okay. Yes. Rah, rah for the mighty BMW. So
right.
Just get a little
German
plug in
engineering,
there.
Those good cars.
Right. Her car is not going to be written off, or do we know just yet?
We don't know quite yet. I thought maybe it's very close to just saying, we'll give you a new car, because right. The whole side of that car is really damaged, but
yeah,
we'll see.
Well, having struck immovable objects myself with with German cars, you know, sometimes these cars can easily be written off because of the structural damage that occurs to the body.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll wait and see. So let's move to striking immovable objects in the dark. Brenda Boo, you had a topic for us that you wanted to talk about. What's going on in your life?
So we did a little bit of a road trip last weekend, about 250 miles across the state of Iowa. And Eric, on the way home, drove the first half. And then by the time I was driving, it was completely dark. And I used to have a job where I would drive half of the commute every night in the dark. And I was very used to it. And it was windy country roads. It was no big deal. But I don't really drive that much in the dark out in the country anymore. So I started driving, and it's on the interstate. And, you know, there's a lot of reflective lights. And then when they get the construction reflectors going too, and then if three lanes are smashed down into two, they always put more and more reflectors. And then, you know, the oncoming traffic can be an issue. And I just noticed that it took me like a half an hour to really readjust to nighttime driving, because I kept trying to look beyond where my headlights were, and that was disconcerting. And then with all these other lights, it was kind of like, what the fuck do I look at? And it was a little overwhelming for a while. And I wondered, do you guys ever experience this kind of feeling when you're driving at night, especially out in the country?
Well, let's go around the room. We'll ask. Peter G., do you have any comments on this? Any tips for driving at night?
I try not to because I'm old and I can't see where I'm going. So if it's someplace I don't know where I am, like driving around Cedar Rapids when I was visiting acquaintances there. It was a little difficult. So I really I don't want you to sound like some kind of old grandpa, but I really try not to drive at night.
What about you, Laughing Buddha? Any tips for driving at night, or do you experience any of these problems yourself?
I currently don't experience problems like this, but it really depends on where I'm driving. I had a recent experience where I was meeting some friends for dinner at a supper club that's probably about 40 miles from here, and it is in a rural part of Minnesota. So I was on a state highway. So I have a tendency, if no one's on the road that I can see coming towards me, I have a tendency to use my bright headlights to give me the best illumination of the road. Now, of course, that really depends on the conditions. This was winter, so we're talking, you know, a half moon or a full moon, so there's lots of snow cover, so everything is pretty bright to start with. But I wouldn't use my headlights, say, in foggy conditions or something that would reduce my visibility. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm always really careful about those vehicles that are coming towards me in the oncoming lane of traffic. As soon as I can see their headlights, I switch back to my low beams.
Right. That's very courteous of you to do that.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, headlight technology has come so much farther from when I first learned to drive that you really need to be careful, because a lot of these headlights can be extremely powerful, and you don't want to blind somebody that's coming towards you.
And I will have a tip for night drivers about how to deal with bright lights in your face. But before I do, let's ask Ranger John. Ranger John, what do you think of driving at night? And do you have any tips for night driving?
I don't mind driving at night. But I use the high beams too. And I also flip the rearview mirror up so that the lights coming from behind don't shine through in the back.
Mm-hmm. I've done that too.
Yeah.
Can you address not just headlights, but the thing that was getting me were all these reflective things that they are putting to redirect traffic. And that's what was getting me. It wasn't the headlights. It was where I was in the lane. So like Toppy just wrote that he likes to look at the actual painted lines. Well, these painted lines are pretty fucked. You know, they usually are not very well painted, and they're faded, and you get, it's just like something else you're trying to eyeball. So I was wondering about all these reflectors. I mean, because like I've been driving, and you'll see this way up ahead, you'll see this giant series of lights, and I'm like, is the fucking world on fire? What is that? And you get up closer, and it's some kind of, you know, it's a road vehicle, and it's like all these extra lights where they're supposed to make it safer, it makes it more disconcerting to me. Has anybody else felt like that? No. Okay, good.
Well, no, but I understand. I agree. Like, there is a lot of light pollution out there at night, especially in these construction zones, so much so that you're right. You can almost not, you're not able to see the road. So I feel for you, but I don't know if I have any tips for dealing with the overly lit, overwarned construction zones.
In the T-Bird, remember how I used to have that cheap, crappy pair of sunglasses, the ones that were like the blue blocker kinds, you know, the ones that wrapped around, they were called like eye gogs or whatever I got at Walmart.
Okay.
The reason why I had those in the T-Bird was, you know how bad the lighting was on the T-Bird. Well, if I was doing a late night driving and there was a lot of light coming at me or reflector, I would put those on. I mean, it's equivalent to sunglasses, but they were kind of these blue blockers, and it helped to reduce the glare. Because you know me, especially if it's nighttime and you add in the equation, like if it's raining outside, I'll forget about it.
Yeah.
It's those blue blocker shades kind of thing, you know, the UV or whatever polarized seem to.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if Trucker Alex has any.
And Faye, there was a suggestion in the chat room from Kathy to turn down your dashboard lighting too, so it's, it's right. not to be so glary. And I think I do that too. I think that's a good thing to do.
Right.
Well, my car doesn't have that option.
All cars have that option.
I'm joking.
It's on there. here's something that you should consider as well. Well, actually, speaking of sunglasses, some people like to drive with those yellow shooting glasses. Have you heard of these target practice glasses?
Yes.
They're yellow, so they don't inhibit your view as much as the sunglasses do, but they do provide some sort of light attenuation for those really bright lights, so that's another thought.
And that's kind of what those glasses that I had were. They were a yellow tint.
Right.
So
this is my tip for dealing with bright lights in your face when you're driving on the highway. Just close your eyes.
Yeah.
So that's how you hit the pole.
So are you going to pay for my headstone or what are you going to do?
No, like if you consider this, you're only closing your eyes when the car's fairly close to you, like within maybe 50 feet or 100 feet maximum. And it only takes about 2 seconds for that car to go by. And in that 2 seconds, you're not going to veer into the oncoming traffic.
I mean, it's a noble concept, though, but the road that she was on is Interstate 80, which is one of the most traveled interstates in the Midwest. And the stretch that she was on, it really was nonstop vehicles. So she'd close her eyes for 2 seconds, open them up, just long enough to close her eyes for 2 seconds, open them up, long enough to close them. It was nonstop traffic, wasn't it?
I get you.
It wasn't really, it really wasn't the headlights that were bothering me, because I know I can deal with headlights. What I do is I just don't look at the other car. I look at where I am, and it's all the reflector lights that got me. And like I said, it took about half an hour, and I readjusted myself. So have you ever felt like that when you got on the highway late at night?
Yeah, I've often wanted to readjust myself when I get on the highway.
I don't have that problem.
Oh, dear.
Well, yes. No, I don't. I just don't know what to tell you. That's a problem, I guess. Stay out of those construction zones. The only other thing I can recommend, I mean, if you don't want to close your eyes when you're driving, then focus on the side of the road, or just focus away from where all the lights coming at you, because that's what really ruins your night vision, is the bright lights shining in your face, and whether they're from headlights or from marker reflectors. You got to try to avoid them. So I say close your eyes when they're in your way, or look down.
Yeah. Drive using the force.
Use the force, yep. Feel the road.
And see, this is why those Google cars would come in real handy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty amazing, though, that everybody, when there's a car accident, everybody acts like the world's coming to an end. Not what you're talking about, Peter, but like when somebody actually dies in a car accident, it's like, why doesn't it happen more often? And how do people actually negotiate all these highways and not have more people get hit, especially at night? I think it's pretty miraculous that we humans are this adaptable. You know what I mean? I mean, if you got a raccoon behind the wheel, they'd probably just panic and slam into all the other cars, right?
I'd screw the raccoon.
Raccoons are terrible drivers.
Bastard drivers.
I'm sorry, Faye. Take your show back. I'm sorry.
No, not at all. That's a great segue into why your windows are so dirty. Those bloody raccoons stealing your car all the time. Peter.
Yes. You well, have
You have an issue.
Well, I do. I want to know, how does the inside of your windshield get so fucking dirty all the time? It's like I have to wipe it down with Windex all the time. I mean, the outside, I understand. It's getting hit by bugs and dirt and tree stuff from the trees and the road and everything. But how does the inside, what is that filmy substance on the inside of everybody's windshield?
Right, I agree. Because unless you smoke, if you don't smoke, there shouldn't be...
Right, and the only thing I can think of is that it's to defrost.
No. Do you run your vent at all? Do you drive with the window open at all?
No, not really. Because I hate all the road noise.
There's no vent on in your car?
Just the defrost sometimes.
Okay.
That's blowing right on the windshield.
But you must have, I mean, you've got some kind of airflow going through the car. Sometimes you must have the air conditioner.
Defrost, yes, or the air conditioner, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so what are you getting at, Eric?
Air that is circulating in the car more often than not is coming from the outside world. It's coming in through the engine area and getting sucked through, condition, temperature-wise, but there could be particles in that. I mean, you're on a road where other vehicles are at. Petrochemicals, you know, could be left in the air. That film that you're seeing there could be partly responsible because of the other cars that are on the road and the exhaust and the road dust and everything coming through that filter system. Uh-huh. You also have to account for there's a certain amount of stuff that's you. I mean, it is. I mean,
ew. You dirty, dirty man.
No.
Ew.
Sweat, heat.
Detritus.
You know, things like
detritus. That. Detritus.
Yeah.
The sloughing off of dead skin cells.
It happens. It's a part of life. And it ends up on your windshield. What are you going to do?
Is that correct, Faye?
Oh, I agree completely. The other thing that occurs inside a car is it's an enclosed environment. Like the only time fresh air ever gets in there is when you open the door to get in or out of the car, or if you are actually using the air system, heat, cool, or whatever, defrost, you are bringing new air into the car. But
right.
When you finish your journey, you stop your car, and that air stagnates inside the car for 8 hours while you're at work until you drive it again. And there's a lot of moisture in the air that we move around in, especially for us people who live near oceans and things like that. We tend to live in very humid climates, and that humidity is inside that car, and all those particles of dead skin cells and rubber tires and smog from you know, the manufacturing that occurs in our cities, all of that dirty air is inside your car, and it's going to settle somewhere, and it's just settling onto the windows. So, these cars are kind of breeding grounds for mold and mildew and all the goopy stuff, and it's got to go somewhere.
Mm-hmm. So maybe the solution is when you stop driving, you should leave the window open for an hour.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have a moonroof? Do you have a sunroof?
Do you have a roof of any kind?
Well, no, an openable roof. Yeah. I mean, heat rises, moisture rises when it gets heated. If you have the ability to allow it a space to escape, specifically out the top where it's wanting to go anyway, I bet you it would reduce at least the amount of residue would normally have clung to your windshield.
Well, according to something that I just Googled, it said that, according to the internet, it's always right. It says it's called outgassing from the upholstery and the plastic components.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Oh. That's
another factor. You know, I have the cleanest vehicles in the world.
I will attest to that. I've seen them.
And that's right. We all had to put booties on when we were visiting Faye.
Right. And white. Yeah, it's like, he does surgery in there.
It's and, like biohazard wear.
And even my windows get dirty after a period of time. So I think it's just a fact of life.
Okay, I have to address something that's in the the chat room. Moose has said that vinegar and water work best. I have to dispel this. Stop it with the vinegar. Vinegar doesn't do anything. Stop. Stop.
Well, but then the inside of your car smells like a salad, too. And who doesn't like a good salad?
Sorry.
I don't think Brenda likes salad too much, does she?
No.
Hey.
You can't make friends with salad.
Please don't take my inventory about vegetables right now. Thank you.
All right, guys. Well, I don't know. Should we end the show or should we talk about the last three items on the docket here quickly?
Well, I think we should save that precious golden content for our next show.
No, talk about it. I vote to talk about it.
I say it's Faye's show. He can do what he wants. If he wants to talk, we'll be here. If not, we'll be here next time.
He asked for our input, so that was I was giving.
And I'm giving mine.
Well, I'll just tell you quickly. One last topic. I'll tell you quickly. I'm quite proud of myself because I fixed my Porsche. I did the first ever major repair. Well, not major, but significant repair on my Porsche. And that was fixing my antifreeze coolant leak problem, which turned out to be the bottle, the water bottle, the reservoir bottle that holds the coolant, which was leaking in my car. And I spent all day yesterday, well, about maybe 6 hours yesterday, ripping out the old water bottle and putting a brand new one in. And let me tell you how difficult it was, because everything in that car is crammed in there. It was like fitting a Tetris piece from hell into the backside of a Volkswagen. So,
did you have to take other things out before you?
Yeah, it was
able to access the bottle.
Yeah, there was a bit of ducting, air ducting for the air cleaner. The air intake came out, and there was an air pump. A little electric pump had to be removed, and all of its plumbing. And then there were fuel lines had to come off, and I had to take off. There were four tubes coming out of this water bottle. Four tubes in very tight quarters. It was a very frustrating experience. Trying to fit that, it was like an L-shaped Tetris piece that had been bashed into 15 different angles, and trying to squeeze it out of a space that it was just perfectly designed for. You know, I mean, these things are machined down to the millimeter, and the hole for it was shaped exactly like the bottle, but the hole to get it out was not, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really, really hard squeezing it out. But I did it, and I'm very happy, and it's working perfectly.
Congratulations.
Good. Do they make a Shilton manual for the Porsche?
No.
I mean, do you have to go straight to Porsche and get the manual kind of stuff? Is that, and then is it in German only?
I do have a manual for this car. I didn't get it from Porsche, but I got it from a hijacked or pirated copy of the manual.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you about these Germans. The manual has instructions on how to use the manual that are about 30 pages.
Jawohl.
So
this is a very thorough technique that we have found works with all of our products.
Yes, you will read these instructions.
And you better not sway from the directions or you'll be sorry. So
don't forget the secret code.
but in that manual, do they have exploded versions of the engine so you can see where everything is kind of at? I mean, is it like the ones that I remember getting for all the cars that I've had over the years?
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's a fairly good manual. My manuals don't cover every last job, but they are quite good. I actually didn't use the manual for this particular job, but I have referred to the manual for other things, and yeah, they have those exploded parts views, and And I have another resource that I use, which has a listing of parts and part numbers and exploded views for parts and things too. So, yeah, I'm quite happy with the resources that I have at my disposal. They're quite good.
I just wondered, because when you're talking about having to, you know, move the ductwork and find that little, get it through that hole, that's where I'd be referring to the Shilton manual going, okay, how the hell am I going to do this? Because they usually add images of showing how to pull it out and things like that.
Right. Well, I did consult, I'm on a forum. I have a Porsche forum that I'm a member of, and there was a lot of really good info on that Porsche forum as well. So that was a real help to me.
Okay. Did the instruction booklet come with the CD, and did the music sound like... Don't you recognize that? It's the music to Tetris. Continue. Sorry. Nobody's getting my jokes.
It's okay. I'm going to edit that one out.
It sounded like Bob Seger to me.
All right, folks. That's it. We're done. Does anybody have any final comments or questions?
I feel abused.
Oh, poor thing. Let's let everyone tell us where you can find yourselves. Let's see. Ranger John, let's start with you.
Where am I?
Go ahead.
I am at dfranger.blogspot.com.
Very good. You got it right. Okay, sorry. I know that Laughing Buddha wants to go, but I want to say to you, Ranger John, this is not acceptable to me, the fact that your show no longer has moving parts. So you say you had a really bad episode where the sound was really terrible.
Yeah.
And you don't want to have the car running or be traveling when you record your show. What is going on here?
Well, the sound sucks, Faye.
It doesn't suck. I think maybe you had one bad episode.
John, are you using Audacity
to
edit? Okay.
Yeah.
I want you to go on to the internet and look up how to do specifically what's called noise removal, and that's going to help you mitigate some of the problems that you've been experiencing when you think you have a lot of road noise. It'll help you to tone that down a bit. So experiment with that. Go ahead and just do a test audio file and play around with it until you kind of get the idea of how that's done. And I think that'll improve your audio quality.
Actually, I've used noise removal on Audacity. And it makes the sound kind of tinny.
Yeah, it's going to do that, but it's better to be clear than unintelligible.
What kind of microphone do you use, Ranger John?
I have, in the car, Daniel and I have two lavalier mics from, I don't know the brand. I think it's the same one that Faye has.
Yeah, I have a Sony. They're just little Sony. They're like lapel mics, right?
Yeah.
And they're quite good.
Yeah, they are good.
My problem is that when I'm in Rockport and I do the show in the Fiat by myself, I don't have the road noise problem.
So what equipment are you using in that other place?
I have the same mic, and I have the same Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the only thing that's different is the car.
Oh.
Well, it could be worse. You could be recording from that Mrs. Boo's deaf car. I mean,
Well, I don't know, John.
Like a bowling alley.
There's there's a lot of comments in the chat room right now that say your sound has always been good on your car chats, and I kind of think maybe you had one bad experience and that you shouldn't give up on that.
Okay.
Even the show you did where you weren't moving at all was fine, was terrific, but I hope I cherish those car chats, and I think many other people do too as well. So,
well, Tuppy says to turn the gain down all the way, and I have the gain turned up all the way, so maybe I'll try that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, let's move on, folks. We've got to close out the show. You can find Ranger John at dfranger.blogspot.com. Eric, where can we find you, sir?
On the radio, Monday through Friday, 9 to noon Central Time, kmryradio.com. I'm on Facebook, Eric Walker. I have a Twitter account. Don't even bother following me on that because I haven't made a tweet in years. So just go to Facebook.
All right. Brenda Boo?
Hello again. It's BrendaBoo.com. And look for Janky June.
Jerk off June.
Jerking it June.
And the companion podcast, The Fitbit Chronicles. Peter G., where can we find you?
Lifeonthishitlist.com. You can call 949-41-LOTZEL or That Peter G. on the Twitter.
And I am the Faye Driver. You can always find me here at pinkwheelnuts.com. And the man who always has the last word on the Pink Wheelnuts Garage, it is the Laughing Buddha.
That's right. I am the Laughing Buddha, the co-host emeritus, and you can find me at thescooterdiaries.net, and you can also find me on Twitter as Laughing Buddha. That's LaughingBuddha. Good night, folks.
Does anybody have a pithy comment for the end?
Actually, I have an accountant joke. You want to hear it?
Yeah, go for it.
Sure. What do you call an accountant without a spreadsheet?
A dentist.
Lost.